everybody. It's time for a special one-off one-liner.com podcast this week. For reasons we will go into in a moment, it's an Asian depression special where we will discuss the tendency of Asian cinema to focus on bleak, violent and hammer-wielding concerns. So without further ado, myself, Scott Morris.
Hello.
And Drew Tavendale.
Hello.
Are going to get cracking on. Right, okay, so just to set the scene, guys, explain away why we've decided to do a one-off Asian depression special, as I've decided to coin it.
Yeah, that's good, because you could fill me in as well, because I can't remember why we decided to do an Asian depression special.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I caught up with the new film from your Korean director feller, Ji-Woon Kim, I Saw the Devil. And I don't know why it particularly stuck out, but it is possibly the bleakest and most depressing film I've seen to date, which is no small concern. And in discussion about that, I think, Scott, did you mention that possibly we should do a, if you enjoyed this, we'd recommend this?
In a way, if I'm honest, it's just an excuse to actually finally get round to watching the three films that have sat on my shelf for about 4 years.
Cool.
Seemed as good a way to get them out of that queue once and for all.
Can we agree that Asian cinema, and in particular sort of Korean cinema at the moment, is possibly the bleakest and most depressing general form of the medium available?
It does seem to be that way. I'm not sure if it's just that only the stuff that is fitting that particular typeset is actually being imported and given any kind of visibility in the UK.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not that happy cinema from this neck of the woods doesn't exist. Things like,
it's just that we're not being exposed to fluffy bunnies.
Yeah, there's all sorts of things that aren't particularly miserable, like the Korean attempt at the monster film The Host from a few years back, and the odd kind of quirky comedy from like the director of Old Boy, and like I'm a Cyborg But That's Okay, which, well, even then it still involved laughing at mentally ill people, so it's not not exactly all sweetness and light. But yeah, there does seem to be a tendency toward this, and I think it's possibly that and the fact that Asian horror for a while was so predominant and had such high visibility that it does seem to lend itself to that sort of stereotype. I'm sure there's lots of really happy, sweet, fluffy bunny films that we're just not seeing, but all the ones that get any kind of reputation over here do seem to be towards the bleak and nasty end of the spectrum.
Yeah, it seems almost unfortunate that that's the mark that's been left on the Western audience, really, isn't it? On the Western conscious, when it comes to Korean cinema, you automatically think dark and brooding and more than likely involving hammer violence.
Yeah.
And slapping. Awful lot of slapping in Korean cinema.
If you're not being struck over the head by a ball-peen hammer, then you are at the very least being vigorously slapped. It's the Korean way. What is this fascination they have with slapping and hammers, man?
Well, I mean, I've actually been to Seoul, and I didn't see anyone getting slapped or being hit with a hammer. So
are there a lot of hardware stores, though?
There was a surprising number of them. It just goes like newsagent, pharmacy, hammer store, newsagent, pharmacy, hammer store.
It's
the Korean way. Maybe one of yours in a hardware store, you get one of ours in B&Q.
It's the weapon du jour for the sort of casual Korean mass murderer, isn't it, really?
Can you be a casual mass murderer?
Yes.
Just something you do in your off time.
Well, there seem to be an inordinate number of them in Korea, given their cinematic output. Well, as we say, I mean, certainly the proportion that we're subjected to. I don't know, subjected, because I'm not complaining about the quality of cinema in general that we absorb from Korea over here by the time it's been filtered through the stuff the distributors decide is worthwhile giving an international release, picking up internationally. But yeah, man, every fourth person in Korea is a serial killer. I'm surprised there's anybody left but the serial killers. In fact, isn't there a scene in I Saw the Devil, Scott, where I kind of lost the gist of it, but I mean, we'll talk about it in a minute, but isn't it another serial killer he ends up in the cab with?
It does imply that it was a League of Evil serial killers.
Yeah.
And they all got together in a clubhouse and just discussed the daily goings on of who they hammered in the face today.
Oh, goodness.
Everybody needs a support network. Let's not judge them.
Oh, no, actually, no, you're right. Actually, no, we'll get to this later on because there's no point in talking about it now and then introduce the film. So we may as well kick off with I Saw the Devil then, because it's been granted a limited release. You're not going to catch it in your average multiplex, but I think in the bigger cities and things, you'll get a chance to see I Saw the Devil this week. It's a new film from Ji-Woon Kim, whose previous works will be relatively well known to fans of Korean cinema, but which I have somehow completely managed to avoid. But Scott, I know you've seen at least a couple of the ones on the list. Before I Saw the Devil, there was The Good, the Bad and the Weird, which is probably his highest profile film.
Yeah, which is a bizarre western, but actually not particularly bleak for once. It was a very, very strange one. It was one of these films I actually watched in the middle of a long-haul flight, so I can't remember an awful lot of it, but it was a bizarre take on a Western that was idiosyncratic, but certainly very stylish. Before that, A Bittersweet Life was another
underwhelming
action film. It was massively stylish, but it didn't have an awful lot else to it. I didn't hate it. I thought it was an okay film. It has an awful lot of style to it, but not exactly my cup of tea. I'm told I've seen A Tale of Two Sisters. I honestly can't remember a thing about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know you've seen that.
Yes, I know you've seen it too, because I was there, but you're not missing anything by forgetting that, because it's not very good. Neither was the Western remake, so not worth spending any time talking about that, I guess.
But I mean, certainly if you're looking at that trajectory, it was definitely getting a lot better. Tale of Two Sisters, at best, forgettable, and probably worse going by on this basis. Bittersweet Life was okay. Didn't think it was brilliant, but it was okay. Good, Bad, and Weird, I did quite like. So, yeah, I leaves us with I Saw the Devil.
and what a thing to be left with. Now, cast-wise, probably the person you're going to recognise most, Byung-Hun Lee, I believe, is a carryover from Bittersweet Life and Good, the Bad, and the Weird. But those probably weren't as high-profile as Old Boy, the star of which Min-Sik Choi plays the serial killer in the film. Byung-Hun Lee is a... Actually, how would you describe his role? Because I notice in the blurb he's described as a secret agent, but he's quite clearly not. He's sort of a special division police officer, isn't he?
My take on it was that he was basically a kind of a bodyguard, so I guess that's Secret Service, but he's more of the kind of black-suited run alongside the...
Yeah, Secret Service is how I'd refer. Yeah,
that's
probably the best parallel I can think of. So anyway, he's left feeling more than a tad miffed by the fact that his pregnant fiancée is dispatched at the hands of Min-Sik Choi's character, who is... against all odds, a hammer-wielding serial killer. He's understandably a bit miffed, and his would-have-been father-in-law passes him dossiers on these guys who police are actively investigating, and he takes it upon himself to then visit each of these guys in turn.
With a hammer.
With a hammer, yes, notably with a hammer. I've got to buy me some shares in some Korean hammer companies, man. Takes it in turn to visit these guys, administer all sorts of punishment against them in an effort to get them to confess as to whether or not they are the man responsible. He eventually crosses paths with Min-Sik Choi's character Kyung Chul while he is in the act of carrying out, well, I assume he's in the about to try and rape the poor girl and then dispatch with her. He interrupts that act and, given the opportunity, decides not to stave the serial killer's head in with a handily placed rock, but instead to maim him and let him go. And from then on, the pair play a game of cat and mouse where Byung-Hun Lee's character catches the serial killer in the act, maims him some more, lets him go, tells him that his pain and punishment is only going to get worse, repeat ad infinitum, until Min-Sik Choi's character cottons on to how he's being tracked and decides to turn the tables on Byung-Hun Lee, and in quite spectacular fashion also. Stylishly directed, it's got that typical sort of Korean economy of direction about it. Everybody's quite silent and moody and brooding, and there aren't too many sort of flashes of technical genius or anything in there. It's one of those films where I suspect there's a lot of effects work sort of going on that you don't notice in places, but it's certainly directed with some economy by Ji-Woon Kim, with the odd sort of flash of inspiration. I'm thinking in particular about one particularly bloody scene that I was referring to earlier, Scott, where Min-Sik Choi's character Kyung Chul ends up in a taxi cab with what I took to be the remaining serial killer culprit off the list, but I'm not entirely sure about that.
Yeah, it's a massive coincidence that he just manages to get into a film with another serial killer who's ready to stab a taxi driver.
Yeah.
It seems to be a massive bit of convenience, but
it seems placed purely to provide the opportunity for a sort of bit of crafty camera work and editing and bloodletting all at the same time, as there's basically a three-way stab-off in a moving taxi cab. and quite fantastically violent is as well. By the end of the film, I don't know what your take on it was, Scott, but by the end of the film, I was kind of, I don't think shell-shock's the right word. I can't say that I enjoyed it in the traditional sense. I appreciated it was a decent piece of film work, but by God, it's the bleakest thing I've ever seen, I think.
I can agree on the styling of the thing. It's very stylish. There's some really nice framing of shots, perhaps more than anything else. That's more what stands out for me. It's just the thought that's gone into some of the camera placing looked very nice, despite the horrors that's actually capturing. But by the end of it, I had completely lost interest after about an hour and a half, because in a way it's a very brave bit of filmmaking, because there's no sympathetic characters in here at all.
No.
I don't know what the point of it all was. The character who's, you know, wronged and out for revenge at the start would seem like a reasonable archetype to get behind, but the way he goes about it is so abhorrent from the outset that you can't really get behind him. And he's
and
not
also
exactly
fantastically impractical.
Yeah, and the character himself, he's just not particularly charismatic. So it's not like he can kind of pull it off as a kind of anti-hero or anything like that. He's just basically being as bad as... You know, he's the monster that your fella from Old Boy intended to be. And it just felt an awful lot like Saw without the high concept.
Yeah.
It felt just like people being hit with hammers. The main thing I took away from it was that Korean people are remarkably resilient, because the amount of punishment they can take and then be in the next scene, oh, he's fine. His face was staved in with a dumbbell. No, but he's okay. He just needs a bit of a lie down. He'll be okay in a couple of days. Yes.
We can reinflate his balls. It's not a problem.
I definitely can't say I enjoyed it, let's say, but by the end of the film, I'd pretty much lost interest and I couldn't really work out who I was supposed to be sympathising with. It almost felt like they were trying to do a switcheroo and make me sympathise with the serial killer rather than the guy who's trying to get revenge. That's
what
weird.
I took to be the intent at the end, because ultimately the act that Byung-Kyun Lee's character is the final act of revenge that he carries out is, I mean, and not physically as abhorrent as the acts that Min Sik Choi's character's carried out, but the context of it.
Yeah, it crosses a line. It goes from just hurting the wronged party to hurting others as well.
Yes, exactly. Without giving anything away, yeah, the context in which it takes place in is as if not more abhorrent than any of the acts that Min Sik Choi, who we're supposed to assume is basically just a lunatic from the outset, has himself carried out. Like you say, I found myself wanting to sympathise with the guy from the start, but he's just so
emotionless,
stony. Yeah, emotionless and stony in the way he carries out his work.
That was obviously intentional, because, you know, he does the kind of breakdown thing at the end of it, and he's
there's no cathartic release for it because presumably he's come to the realization that he is no better than the guy that he spent all this time punishing. There is no catharsis for him, and that's the bleakest thing about the film, is that at the end of it, your net gain is zero.
Yes. It's a zero-sum hammer game.
Exactly. It's a zero-sum hammer game painted in all kinds of shades of red. But again, it does that sort of Korean thing that approaches the subject matter in a way that I think is often more mature than Western cinema, and that it doesn't shy away from things, and it approaches it in a kind of matter-of-fact way, and it doesn't feel, in most occasions, it doesn't feel that exploitative, but then at the same time, it sort of balances that maturity of the way it deals with the graphic element with like some bizarrely childish choices in plotting. And so at the core of it, the game this guy decides to play, his method for revenge, is just so hugely impractical and involves such, you know, bizarre things as basically forcing the guy to swallow a GPS tracking device with a microphone in it, so that convoluted.
Yeah.
So that he can sort of, and this guy sort of pointed out, how come every time I try and rape and murder a girl, he bursts into the room and hits me with a fire extinguisher? You know, and presumably he hasn't been to the bathroom for about 5 days or something like that. That's the only way I can see it working. You know, and then when he finally cottons on, I can't say too much, obviously, without ruining it for anybody that might want to see it, but I had high hopes, but in the end, I don't feel one way or the other about it. It just kind of took the edge off my day. I just kind of sat and ate my tea afterwards, sort of thinking, oh, this would have been a good tea any other day, but I don't feel like it now. That's the effect that I saw the devil had on me. I'm glad someone else shared the bleakness of it. Drew, you didn't catch up with it yet, did you?
No.
Has any of this made you want to watch it?
Will you be shocked if I say no?
No. It might come round to your house and hit you with a hammer, though.
Again?
Just in the spirit of the piece.
I'm not quite as resilient as Korean people. It took me several days to get over that the last time.
And we never could reinflate your balls. Overall, Scott, would you know, is it worth recommending to sort of Korean cinema fans if no one else?
Gosh, it's hard to say. A few of the films we'll talk about today I did actually like, but it's how do you recommend something that is not in and of itself enjoyable and you don't actually see anything, you don't really learn anything from it, it's not really telling much of a story. If you're a fan of the kind of Korean stuff that's been kicking around a while, if you liked Old Boy and that sort of thing, if you appreciate the style and the sort of technical chops that we've seen from these kind of directors over the past few years, yes, it is worth looking at it. This would make a very bad first impression if this is your... This would be a poor place to start, although, as we might speak if we talk about Vital, perhaps not unrecoverable. It's very difficult to recommend to anyone. At the risk of being amazingly trite, if this is the sort of thing you like, then you'll like this sort of thing. Yeah. But it's certainly not one for the mass markets.
It's a kind of a giveaway that I'm looking now at its rating on IMDb, and the user rating is 8 out of 10, and the Metascore is 67 out of 100. And to me, that confirms my suspicion that the people who are voting this and giving it, you know, that have given it an average of 8 out of 10 on IMDb are people who think this is a great film purely because it is pretty extreme in places.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say. And I think that kind of person, like, yeah, it's got lots of extreme stuff in it, therefore it's great. But at the end of the day, extreme content aside, I think the Metascore is probably more representative of the overall quality of the thing. I think sort of, you know, yeah, 67 out of 100, right, like 2 out of 3 then. That's about right, I suppose.
I mean, it is all really about violence at the end of the day. I mean, if you had this film cut in such a way that it basically cut away or showed all this kind of violence and implied it going on off camera, then would there be a film? And I don't think there would. I don't think it would be an inherently pointless film without the gore, really, without the extremes that it takes. As you were saying, it doesn't feel that it's kind of reveling in it or anything like that. It's not being particularly exploitative in the way that most Western horrors would be if they were attempting something like that. But it is really all the film has, that it's only a punch that it can deliver, and the rest of it just doesn't hold up on its own.
It's telling of the content that it's one of the few films I've ever heard about that had trouble getting past the ratings board in Korea, and they were forced to revisit several times. And I can't remember if I explained it to you, Scott, or to you, Drew, that it wasn't technically banned because it was originally given a rating that would allow it to only be shown in, I think, adult-only cinemas or something like
that
in Korea.
Yeah, I remember mentioning that, yeah.
Yeah, of which, unfortunately, there are none.
So theoretically it was allowed, just wasn't any practical way to see it.
Yeah. Exactly, we might have been the only ones to get to see it. So that should tell you pretty much what you need to know about it. So yeah, make up your mind. I would find it difficult to recommend. I didn't enjoy it, I didn't not enjoy it. It's just it was there and made me feel sad. And I think, as I said to you, Scott, it's one of those films where just nobody gains anything in the end. Nobody comes out of that film happy. And you as the viewer, even if you enjoyed it as a film, I find it hard to believe you'd be happy about it. You have been warned. Okay then, so shall we give brief mention to another one of the films that you mentioned, Scott, Slim Till Dead?
I pegged this one for inclusion based on the DVD box's recap of the content matter. You've got a serial killer who's preying on young models and forcing them to slim down to 70 pounds, which, as anyone with a basic grasp of mass will know, that this is a feat you can generally only achieve by removing limbs or starving them to the point of emaciation, which sounds quite grim. I don't think that's a controversial viewpoint, right? That sounds quite grim. But it turns out that the film's really more concerned with whether or not the investigating cop, Sergeant Tack, played by your friend and ours, Anthony Wong, whether or not he's managed to talk his wife into giving him some hot loving. I mean, nominally, it's still about Sergeant Tack trying to work out why these girls, they're from some TV slimming competition, that's the kind of link between them, why they're turning up dead, assisted by his underlings and his ex-detective wife Ling, played by Sharon Tang. But it always just comes back to Wong complaining about the lack of action in between the marital sheets in his over-the-top fashion that I've ever seen in what's nominally a thriller. So the problem with the film is basically that it's far too uneven in tone. Up until the final revelations of who done it, and how they done it, and why they done it, at least police procedural parts of the drama are competently done. A little workmanlike, I suppose, but, you know, they're okay. It has all the makings of a reasonable, if not earth-shatteringly innovative, murder mystery. But every other scene is either Wong playing Tack for laughs, or swinging far too back the other way, having him doubt his self-worth as he's been passed over for promotion and he feels slightly emasculated and yada yada yada. I've seen Anthony Wong play all of the elements and emotions that he's called on to portray here in other films and done very well, but not over what is basically alternating scenes. This feels like some sort of actor's workshop where the director's sort of shouting a different emotion every 3 minutes to... for Wong to kind of change character. So you get all this kind of bouncing up and down in emotional range, and it's kind of difficult to believe in this character, and so therefore it's kind of difficult to invest any emotion in Tack's character. So when things nominally get kind of tough later on in the film, it's just too big an ask to really care about him or anyone else in the story. I'm being quite polite and not mentioning the ending of the film too explicitly, but let's just say that it's an entire bucket full of stupid. It would have been laughable enough to bring down an excellently handled film, but on a film that's only just scraping watchable. I'm just not encouraging anyone to make any heroic efforts to track this one down.
And there you have it. I'm just fascinated by the title. That's one of the better titles I've ever heard.
Yeah, I suspect that was mainly why I purchased it myself. I mean, obviously Anthony Wong has been in many films.
He's a prolific actor.
Oh, yeah, and I would imagine some of our favourite films from our formative years, you know, Hard Boiled and things like that, all the way up to more recently the Infernal Affairs trilogy. Yeah, I got a lot of respect for him, but this is just not one of the better films.
Presumably a paycheck pickup for old Anthony. Let's hop over to Samaritan Girl, which was a 2004 effort from Ki-duk Kim, the Korean director, which was, I think, his film before... Was this the film which came before Three Iron?
Yes,
which,
directly yes, before it, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Which I think will probably still be his possibly his best-known film to Western audiences, although you've Spring, Summer, Autumn, Winter and Spring gained a lot of kudos among critics. I seem to remember when it came out, and that was a film preceding this one. But without waffling on too much, it's the story of two young schoolgirls, one of whom has decided to... and they are young, one of whom has decided to prostitute herself out to a variety of middle-aged men in order to raise funds for her and her friend, who is essentially acting as her pimp, to travel to Europe. Their carefree approach goes somewhat pear-shaped, I think it's fair to say, when the police intervene and the young girl prostituting herself throws herself out of a window, seemingly quite happily, bizarrely.
that's an odd thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and ends up critically ill in hospital. Her friend, Yo Jin, who's played by Ji-min Kwak, if I'm reading correctly. My Korean pronunciation is obviously not the greatest. Then takes it upon herself, after her friend's death, to revisit her clients, sleep with them herself, and then refund them their money, presumably in some sort of effort to recoup some karma for something or other. I'm not entirely sure. Her father, who is a police officer, then finds out about this and decides to visit these men himself and, well...
Brings a hammer.
Yeah, you do the math. It's a Korean film. Drew, you did watch Samaritan Girl, didn't you?
I did.
What was your overall impression?
Not good. And you watch this and you're thinking, it seems almost flippant the reason this girl's in prostitution to begin with too, not because she's been forced into this. I want a holiday, which is an odd start to it. Then after potentially getting caught by the police, decides to throw herself quite happily out of a window, as you mentioned, and then the film gets stupider.
Although, if I remember correctly, it is only sort of like a first floor window as well, isn't it?
Possibly second. It's not particularly high.
No.
Quite how she does quite so much damage, I've no idea, but quite why she would jump in the first place is beyond me. But yeah, so after she dies, she said her friend decides to sleep with the men that her friend slept with and give them the money back, and I'm watching this. I can't see what the point of this is.
Mm. Everyone's motivations are a little bit oblique, aren't they? Well, a lot oblique. Well, completely impenetrable as well.
I don't know, I just couldn't bring myself to care about anyone or anything happening in the film. Going by the title, particularly Samaritan Girl, and they mention this Indian prostitute who had converted lots of people to Buddhism after they slept with her. It's almost like, as you're saying, a karma thing, Craig.
Well, there is a hint of that. Yeah, there is a hint of that, isn't there, when she sort of revisits the clients. They all sort of...
Well, it's only a hint, and that's it. Because the first guy she visits sort of changes his life a bit, doesn't he?
Yeah, they all sort of develop sort of marginally redeeming qualities, don't they? But not to the extent where you could say that she's somehow redeemed them.
Yeah, and it only happens maybe the first couple.
Yeah.
But then the next one, I don't think you see anything. And after that, they're interrupted, and the guy is forced into... a rather final act by meeting the girl's father, and then everything to do with sex sort of stops, and they go for a wee graveside picnic in the country, as you do, and then there's a driving lesson, and the film ends.
Yes.
I really...
the film ends in, by now, customarily oblique fashion.
Yeah, oblique, but not particularly bleak, because it's like, what's going on? Why? They're having a driving lesson, right? And something's happened to him, that makes sense because he did something earlier, but oh, it's the end. Nothing happened? Right? you can't sell something because there doesn't seem to be any point. It's not an exploration of prostitution. It's not really an exploration of revenge or anything.
Mm.
Don't really care about anybody in it.
It could almost be described as whimsical if it weren't for the sort of the inherent subject matter of prostitution and murder.
Yeah, it was me going with like the why they were doing it too is because they wanted a plane ticket.
Mm.
Yeah, it's always almost whimsical, and it's always hard to tell when people are acting in a language you don't know, but the acting seemed pretty shitty throughout too, and I can't see the point of the song. It doesn't appear to have anything to say or anything, any interesting characters. It's just sort of there and it ends.
Yeah. I'm going to go on a limb and say that in a sort of, in a strangely dreamlike way, I enjoyed this possibly marginally more than I Saw the Devil, which obviously isn't necessarily a huge recommendation in itself, depending on your sort of mental state. But I found it an odd film to, what am I trying to say? There were a couple of aspects that troubled me. The first being, as Drew said, the sort of flippant way in which this girl treats prostitution. And I mean, we're talking about a girl who I suppose is supposed to be sort of 15, 16, that sort of age, treats prostitution as a means to a holiday. But also, I don't know if I'm the only one who came across it, but there was a borderline odd relationship between Yoo-jin and her father, I thought, as well.
Can't say I particularly noticed that.
I felt at times the dad was a little creepy. I don't know if that's just a cultural thing or if I'm just reading it way incorrectly.
I know the bits you're talking about, but I didn't read it like that. It was more just that he's sort of treating her as if she's a bit younger than she is.
Yeah, well, because she lost her mother.
It seemed to me that it shares a lot with the other films from Kiduk Kim I've seen. The Isle, Bad Guy, probably two most immediately similar, because they both have prostitution involved in as well. But also,
I forgot about Bad Guy, yeah.
Also, Breathe, which I saw at one of the film festivals in the past couple of years. Basically, everything that I've seen from Kiduk Kim, it's always about alienation, and it's always about isolation, and it's about basic failures in relationships. In this case, I think the failure relationship you might be picking up on is between the kid and the father. Basically, because they've kind of grown apart, that's in part why you get the ending that you do. I know what you mean. I did actually relatively enjoy this. There's a certain hypnotic rhythm to it.
It makes
it quite... I don't know. It's not certainly not enjoyable, but it made it quite... like.
I can neither quantify nor qualify why I enjoyed it to some extent. Although I'm not exactly cock-a-hoop about it.
There's really nothing in here that's likeable, but I liked it anyway. it does a particularly dreadful... I mean, if you want to, you could sit and pick this film apart. As I say, I don't know why anyone's doing what they're doing. I mean, the father's motivations are kind of relatively understandable, but the way he goes about everything is just so over the top that he's basically becoming the emotional linchpin of the film, but as he gets more and more extreme, he gets less and less empathetic, and it's really, the film is going out of its way to try and strip any reason you would have to like it from it as it goes on. It's really difficult to recommend that anyone would sort of beat a path to your local South Korean DVD emporium, should such a thing exist. But I liked it anyway. I can't really justify why. It just has this strange dreamlike pacing going throughout it manages to just about hold attention without really doing a great deal in the way of certainly action or character studies. It's just something that it's a mood piece. The Isle, almost nothing happens in The Isle either, which is a better film. It's a far more powerful film, but almost nothing happens in that either. It's almost purely mood and the odd kind of moment of extreme either emotional or violence, and it's the same kind of thing that's shown up in Samaritan Girl. It doesn't feel like it's changed much in the, I forget when Isle was, but I think it was, you know, 1999 or something like that. It was
2000.
It doesn't feel like a lot's changed there. I've not actually seen Three Iron or the other more famous one, The Summer, blah 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 blah. I've liked all of the films from Kiduk Kim that I've seen, probably this one least. But basically they're all coming back to the same things. It's all really more about mood than creating this mood of disenchantment and alienation. Yeah. And that, by its very nature, it's something that you're not going to like because that's what it's about. it's desperately trying to push you away as much as the characters in it are pushing themselves away.
I wouldn't let it put you off seeing Three Iron, because it's kind of filmed in the same year, but in sharing a similarly kind of whimsical sort of tone, but not to such sort of dark subject matter. I think you'd probably find it more enjoyable. But I tell you what else I noticed about this as well, and again, it's probably, I shouldn't probably find it surprising given the sort of flippant nature of the rest of it. I keep coming back to this word flippant, because Drew, you hit the nail on the head with that. But there's this sort of recurring musical score that sounds like it was meant to have been a piece of music for one of the Zelda games or something, but then they decided it was just slightly too downbeat. I find it fair to say that I enjoyed it slightly more than I Saw the Devil, but I'm not sure how soon again I would sort of want to revisit it, unless I were doing some sort of retrospective of the director's work. I'm sure it'd be worth mentioning again. But yeah, it does have, you're right, Scott, it does have a certain sort of rhythmic, bizarrely
compelling,
yeah, sort of flow to it. But that's what I mean. Certainly, I didn't enjoy it anywhere near as much as I enjoyed Bad Guy, which I think we came out of seeing that at the cinema, and I immediately decided to track a copy of that down on DVD from good old Hi-Fi Zone, rest its soul. I mean, that's a film that I really enjoyed.
I really enjoyed Bad Guy.
Like I referred to with I Saw the Devil, it's that thing that seems to happen in a lot of the Korean cinema that I've seen, that this desire to sort of approach difficult issues, but in an oddly sort of amateurish narrative fashion, almost sort of let's throw this plot together on the back of a napkin, you know, and let's not worry too much about the fact that it doesn't actually make that much sense, because it'll allow us to explore these particular topics. I'm not even going to say issues, because I don't know how much of an issue teenage prostitution is in Korea, but it's obviously something that the director's decided to sit down and write about, and I'm assuming he's trying to say something about the state of affairs here, but I'm damned if I know what it is. I was expecting something more meaningful, because as you said, it's got the reference to, and I forget her name, but the Indian prostitute who had
Varamitra, something like that.
Vasumitra, yeah, that's it. Who had supposedly converted all these guys to Hinduism. I was expecting some sort of payoff there, but yeah, bizarre. I often wonder if these are just cultural differences. Maybe it'd be more meaningful if you'd grown up in the midst of Korean culture, but then I've always considered cinema to be a sort of a universal medium, and I don't know. It's just this weird thing with Korean cinema and certain directors, but I don't know. Who am I to wax lyrical? Two Korean efforts and one Chinese so far. Scott, you were going to tell us a little bit about a Japanese effort called Vital.
A plot recap, stolen unashamedly from the back of the DVD box. Hiroshi Takagi, who in this case this is played by Tadanobu Asano, wakes in a hospital after a car accident to discover that his memory is all but lost. He's unable to even recognise his parents. But as his memories return, so does an earlier interest in medicine. Apparently he had been accepted for some kind of medical institution, so he immediately re-enrolls in this course, and one of the first classes involves the dissection of a female corpse. But this begins to jog a memory, and he realises that he actually has known the woman on the table who was once a living, breathing person in that body. My main interest in this film was it's directed by Shinya Tsukamoto, who I've seen some films from in the past. In fact, his original exposure to him was his body horrors, Tetsuo and Tetsuo 2 Body Hammer, which would have been among the first Japanese films I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And would also have been, I guess, largely responsible for my initial opinions of Japanese culture, that being that it's completely fucking mental. they certainly have this remarkable visual style, and so did the last Tsukamoto film I watched, which was 2002's erotic drama A Snake of June, which I think we all saw.
Oh, I really enjoyed A Snake of June. I think that's the only film of his I've seen.
That was just such a remarkable visual style that it's, and it's amongst all his work that I've seen, it has it's a really strong visual director. So picked this up pretty much as soon as I could get my hands on it in DVD, and it sat on a shelf and I watched it, so this was as good a chance as any. This has the same kind of distinctive style, and it's probably closer to his sort of earlier body horrors than any of the other stuff he's been doing lately. It's a very distinctive film. The central premise of it walks a tightrope between sort of fascinating and just unbearably creepy. And I think the toll it could take an audience is about as bad as it does for the lead character. Basically, the film involves his memories returning to him and his struggle to kind of reintegrate his unfolding memories of what happened before his accident. Again, it's one of these useful movie amnesia plots where he loses his memory completely, but it happens to come back in drips and drabs, just at dramatic intervals.
In this case, it comes back because he gets smacked in the head with something.
No, so it's not quite as bad as that.
He doesn't get smacked in the head by a hammer, does he?
Surprisingly enough, no. This is Japan. They are far more cultured and civilized over there. There's no hammer shops in Japan.
They probably got robots to do all the hammering for them, don't they?
Yeah, they have robot hammers. No, they have body hammers, as we've established in Tsukamoto's work. It's essentially revolving around Hiroshi trying to reintegrate his memory, his old memories, with what's happened since then, and how his relationship with the woman he's, you know, supposedly cutting up for his medical studies sort of fit into his life before, and it uncovers various odds and sods, which is really difficult to deal with. Of all the films I think we've spoken about, this is probably the most interesting. I think it held my attention a lot more than the rest of the films, for no other reason than it's a lot more filmic, for want of a better term, than all the rest of them so far. With the exception of Slim Till Dead, which is a fairly conventional structure, but it's just not very good. The other two films, I Saw the Devil and Samaritan Girl, even though I liked them in places, they're difficult to fit into any kind of conventional narrative. They don't have the usual sort of beginning, middle and end that really makes a lot of sense to kind of put into a narrative framework. There's elements of this because, as with most things that deal with memory loss, it does go a bit sort of out of order. It does have a bit of non-linearity to it, but not so much though as to be overly distracting as it can in a lot of other films. It's just a better crafted film than all the other ones, and it's probably has a stronger story and stronger performances through it. The visual style, not that things like Samaritan Girl and I Saw the Devil are shorn of visual stylings, but Sugimoto does have a real knack for this kind of thing. A slowly paced film. As with a few other ones, there's not an awful lot happening, more so than Samaritan Girl, I've got to be honest, but it just manages to dole out just enough chunks of information at just the right intervals to kind of hold your attention. Can't say an awful lot much more about it, but I did very much enjoy it. I think it's as good a film from Tsukamoto as I've seen. Tetsuo and Tetsuo 2 were some of his earlier films, so I don't think they really hold up quite so much other than just being kind of extreme out there and experimental. They're still very, you know, stylish and innovative to look at even today, but they don't, as stories, they're not particularly great. A Snake of June, I've not actually seen this sort in the cinema, but I did enjoy that quite a bit, and I think this holds up in terms of story. It's just as enjoyable as A Snake of June, and it just reminded me that I really must make more of an effort to track down the rest of Tsukamoto's work. Admittedly, I've only seen 4 of the, I think, it must be about 8 or 9 films I've seen now, but
there's a Tetsuo film as well.
I'm not sure how much that might be a remake, because it's got like Michael Clarke Duncan or someone in that as well. So it might have been an American one, I'm not sure. But yeah, basically there's good evidence to see that most of the stuff he's done is quite good, so it's definitely worth keeping an eye on. So yeah, I'd recommend that probably more than any of the other films. It's certainly an easier film to recommend to the rest of them. It's not quite so obsessed with just either violence or extremity. It's not trying to push an envelope for no good reason. It does seem to have a far better idea of how its elements should service the story, rather than just allowing those elements to completely overshadow the story, like in I Saw the Devil. It's obviously a strange show that you could say that this is the most accessible of the films we've spoken about today, but in this company, yes, it is, and well worth looking.
I noticed with interest that, I mean, of his body of work, of Tsukamoto's work, I've only ever seen A Snake of June. I haven't seen that again, I don't think. I'm sure I have it somewhere, but I don't think I've watched it since seeing it at the cinema that time. But it left a real impression, and visually I was really impressed by it. And I noticed that Darren Aronofsky has cited him as an inspiration, which, in terms of visual style, I can actually really see in Darren Aronofsky's work. I can see where that's come from, just from having seen A Snake of June, actually. So there you go. I shall certainly catch up with Vital then on that recommendation. I might give Slim Till Dead a miss.
Wise decision.
So yeah, there you go, guys. We diverged a little from the norm, but there, hopefully that'll give you some idea of, well, I say the current state of Eastern cinema, but there's a couple of older films in there. But yeah, we just felt like
the state
like
of Eastern cinema about 7 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to keep current with 7 years ago?
Yeah, that's about right. An odd podcast, but we make no apologies. So without dwelling on it for too long, I've been Craig. Scott was Scott.
Bye.
And Drew was... We're fairly sure, Drew.
I'm fairly sure too.
Good. Bye. Drew. If that is his real name. Catch you later, guys. Bye.
He's getting texts from Colin Farrell, presumably sort of subtly trying to suggest that he should lay off the crack. Winning.